Welcome to the Flow Tracy Monday Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 2:44 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is May 20th. I apologize for the late recording. I was in the middle of recording when my computer crashed, so I've been trying to do repairs over the last hour. But one thing that is certainly standing out today is that Amazon is at a new high. It has broken up and out of this month-long range. That is certainly supportive of the share. Now, one thing that we can also see is that Shopify has been doing spectacularly well and is way up on the year. It was also at a new high today, and while the pace of the advance has been nothing short of spectacular, it is still reasonably orderly with a sequence of ranges, one above another now, and the size of these two ranges over the course of the last month have been pretty similar. So we are going to have to see a very clear and substantive downward dynamic similar to what we had right in the towards the end of April, but with follow through. And until that occurs, then this is still a reasonably orderly advance, despite the fact that we have got an almost 50% overextension relative to the trend mean, which is really rather extraordinary by any stretch of the imagination. There is speculation that by teaming up with Google's shopping app, Shopify is going to be able to compete with Amazon. And Google was in positive territory today too, despite the fact that there are antitrust allegations being leveled at it by a number of states. What this is clearly suggesting is that there is still plenty of room in the outlook for liquidity-fueled rallies. And when we then think about how is that affecting larger markets, well, the S&P 500 was able to push on to new recovery highs in here today. It is now right in the region of the 200-day moving average and the region of the psychological 3,000 level. This is a big psychological Rubicon it needs to overcome in order to really demonstrate that we are back in a period of demand dominance beyond the unwinding of the extremely deep oversold condition. There is a lot riding on the efficacy of Moderna's vaccine data. They used the opportunity of, releasing a very limited number of, or positive results from a very limited number of patients to boost the share price. Then they sold more shares. That's tantamount to fraud. Regardless of whether the vaccine works or not, that's not very good in terms of corporate governance. And the share was in positive territory today. It has continued to hold the sequence of higher reaction lows. It has risen spectacularly over the course of the last 2 months. So the good news needs to keep coming. There is the realistic possibility that if it's not Moderna, or it will be another company comes up with the vaccine for the coronavirus. There are 100 different candidates, and we may need more than one. Moderna is certainly the one that's been furthest along, but I personally do feel a little bit unsettled now by the fact that they are pumping the share price with each new piece of data. In fact, this is quite similar to what precious metal miners do. Great Bear Resources, for example, has been doing a fantastic job of publicizing each one of its new drill holes. They are engaged in a successful drilling operation in Ontario, and it's near the Red Lake mine, which has been one of the most productive of any Canadian gold mines. What we can see by looking at their news flow is that every single time there is a new hole drilled, then we get these news items with 18.57 grams per ton over 13 meters and with 2.67 over the hole, or the entire hole drilled. this is the, it seems to be the kind of strategy that Moderna is following. And it does tend to show the data in the best possible light. That doesn't necessarily mean that is how regulators are going to view it. So we do need to, I think, have some modicum of caution when viewing some of this data. One thing that was particularly interesting today as well is the UK government, for the first time, has been able to borrow at a negative rate. And that is obviously something that is rather comforting for any country, that investors are willing to give them their money, or to pay them to take their money more correctly. The pound has been steady around the 120 area. It's in the lower side of the overhead trading range that persisted between March and April, so it's going to have to pop above this level in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The 2-year yield is in negative territory, but the entire yield curve is very flat out to about 7-year maturities, with nothing really trading at a yield of more than 10 basis points. And the new Bank of England governor is not averse to talking about the potential for negative interest rates. Obviously, the UK would certainly like to continue to enjoy negative borrowing costs, and most particularly when it comes to thinking about how the massive stimulus that's been put in place is going to be paid for. We also have the additional point that there has been a very significant advance in the size of the Bank of England's balance sheet. One thing that I think is particularly notable is that, contrary to what the USA did, which was to try and contract their balance sheet in quantitative tightening, the size of the UK's balance sheet was kept really very steady from approximately 2013 until now, and now it has broken out. And the UK owns more of its outstanding debt than any other central bank other than Japan. This is also perhaps only the thin end of the wedge, because one of the reasons why the Indonesian rupiah has been so steady is because of the Indonesian Central Bank's quantitative easing program. Now, this is a significant event. It was considered impossible for emerging markets to engage in quantitative easing, that everyone really assumed that international investors wouldn't tolerate that kind of activity. But the Bank of Indonesia is doing that. They're looking at buying upwards of 25% of the outstanding new issues that the government of Indonesia actually come up with. And the Philippines has done something similar. They're also engaging in quantitative easing. Now, that is also part of the reason why the Philippine peso has been quite steady, because they are attempting to support the economy. But it's counterintuitive that if they are printing the money to support the economy, that should have a deleterious effect on the currency. But in the short term, it's probably likely that investors are willing to give these countries the benefit of the doubt because of the near-term risks from the lockdowns and the coronavirus and the hit that that has had to the global economy. And investors are probably willing to give them the benefit of the doubt before really coming back to think about it in a more robust fashion when the coronavirus eventually does subside. But it does raise important questions. And I think the biggest one is, are we now at a point in the markets where the liquidity-fueled rally that's been underway for the last 12 years is moving into another expansionary phase, and that this time the amount of money being printed is not going to be simply limited to the four largest central banks, but rather that it is going to be a policy followed by the majority of global central banks? I think that's a very big question, because if emerging economies like Indonesia and the Philippines can engage in quantitative easing, well, then that does open the door to a substantial number of additional countries also engaging in quantitative easing. And we have to remember that money is both global and mobile. It will travel from wherever it is created to find a home in the most lucrative market, whether that is in markets with potential for capital appreciation, currency market appreciation, or yield. Money will flow towards those sectors from where it's created. Simply taking the balance sheets of the largest central banks and aggregating them, redenominating into dollars, we can see that almost 4 trillion has been created in just the last 2 months. And there is clearly the potential that this is simply going to continue to rally. And that's one of the primary reasons why Wall Street continues to do well, that there is this massive supply of additional liquidity, and it is particularly benefiting the kinds of companies that do not have a big physical imprint, rely heavily on the virtual world of the internet to drive their businesses, and have deployed subscription business models so that they don't tend to have the same kind of peak to trough swings that would be associated with the normal product cycle in the technology sector, or indeed recessions. Of course, if regular consumers don't have the wherewithal to pay for all of their subscriptions, some are obviously going to have a more difficult time. But the reality right now is that investors are willing to look past the economic hiatus because most of the hardest hit economies are opening back up, and it's unlikely that we're going to go back into full lockdown. Perhaps we will have a more mature attitude to what in fact is required and concentrate more completely on the most at-risk portions of society, which would be to lend the greatest possible to support to elderly people, while the rest of the economy can continue to perform. But with all the potential for massive money printing on a truly global basis, then gold prices are still really very steady, and a good portion of the overbought condition has been unwound, and the longer prices go sideways, the faster that will occur. We are in the region of the peaks from back in 2012, so it is a natural area where we might anticipate some resistance coming through. But subject to the potential for any consolidation, I think the most likely scenario is that we are going to see gold breaking on the upside. And when we look at the gold-silver ratio, then I think we have some other interesting points to make. The first is that silver got up to or got down to 120 times less than the price of gold, which is a really rather extraordinary valuation. The cheapest silver had ever been was back in the early 1990s, and that was at gold at 100 times the price of silver. One thing that I think is particularly relevant is if we think about the gold market starting to do better, it massively outperformed silver in 1998 all the way through to approximately 2003. It was in 2003 that silver finally started to outperform, and that persisted until about 2007. Then silver underperformed by a wide margin during the crash in 2008, and then it moved to a very significant period of outperformance before peaking in 2011. And since then, gold has outperformed silver by a very considerable margin. Now, we know that silver is often regarded as high beta gold. We also can see that on the ratio, silver doesn't tend to outperform at the beginning of the cycle. It is usually by the time the cycle has been going on for a while that silver then starts to outperform. Well, silver prices have been really rather steady over the course of the last few sessions, and they are now back up towards the $18 area. But it has cruised through the 200-day moving average. There is very clearly a failed downside break below the $15 area, and the first real area of potential resistance is around the $20 level. And platinum has a very similar condition. So platinum was up another $40 or so in here today. It has now pushed through its 200-day moving average, but the more important point is it has cleared the $800 area. It's up now into the 900s, and $1,000 has been an area of resistance on repeated occasions over the last 4 years. The big question at this stage is, are we going to see it break on the upside? Then palladium prices have been doing better, with improving perceptions about the potential for car demand to start picking up. Platinum has bounced from the region of the trend mean. It has broken the sequence of lower rally highs since the peak in February, and it does now look like we have potential for some additional upside in here. And I'm rather surprised by the fact that it was able to find support in the region of the trend mean. Nickel has been a metal that has tended to rally in a rather abrupt fashion over the course of the last 3 years, only to give up most of the advance. But what I thought in here was today was interesting is that it has now rallied enough to break the downtrend from the peak back in September. So there is clear potential here for additional upside. One thing that has become quite clear is that despite the resilience of the electric car market, cobalt hasn't moved at all. And part of the reason for that is a lot of the new battery chemistries don't use cobalt. So the fears that were being expressed back in 2018 that this was a metal that was invaluable and to the battery sector and could not be done without have been proved completely false. And it's a great example of the old commodity adage that the cure for high prices is high prices. Now that's, I think, one of the clear conclusions we can draw, that there is a clear incentive for technology companies to innovate and to tackle these limited supply arguments when they are still in their infancy. That's particularly true of nickel and also of lithium. Lithium prices are also really quite depressed. But the technology is improving all the time. And with the potential for Tesla to announce a 1,000,000-mile battery, then that's obviously another big milestone in terms of the development of battery technology. The potential for aluminium lithium batteries to become more prevalent in the utility sector is also a very significant potential outcome. So this does look like a sector with plenty of room to perform, and not least because some of the technical challenges have in fact been solved. When we think about the outlook for the dollar index, then the price has been pulling back over the course of the last few days. There is the, I think, clear indication here that when we look at the currencies that are strengthening, there is a tendency now for the countries that have announced the most aggressive actions to support their economies have in fact seen their currencies rally. That is as true of Indonesia or the Philippines as it is of the euro. And the euro now is at the upper side of this range over the last 6 weeks. It's testing the region of the trend mean. There is the potential that France and Germany are going to engineer some form of federal debt issuance for Europe. Now, if that does go ahead, it would be really very good news. It would suggest that one of the major obstacles to Europe overcoming its internal challenges have been achieved. We're probably not quite there yet, but perhaps investors are willing to look past the current issues and towards a potential solution, and that could be positive for the euro. But of course, in order to clearly demonstrate that it is back in a demand-dominated environment, it will have to sustain a move above its trend mean. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.